We'll continue with this wonderful line. Why I call this wonderful is because this captures the human malady correctly, points to the real problem and the ultimate cure of the enigma. There is a very nice line in Savitri: the enigma's knot is tied to humankind. You see, there have been various kinds of ways people have tried to understand suffering in God's world, and they have passed the blame to man. Your karmas, God made a perfect world, you spoilt it, your karmas, therefore you suffer. Which is quite a monstrous thing to say, because look at it, karma, most human beings, they act in ignorance. People didn't create ignorance. Man didn't create ignorance. He is a victim of ignorance. So to blame him for everything that happens. So in volume 2, Mother's early talks, it's on suffering. I was so pleased and happy when I had read long, long back. She says, the real cause of suffering is the imperfection of matter. You enter into matter, you forget that you are the spirit within. Then you struggle almost 20-25 years of life. Even Mother says, even as somebody who has realized the divine, when it takes a material body, it takes time for that consciousness to come out. That's why at one place he speaks about, you know, the sexual method of reproduction has this big problem, because it's a plunge into inconscience, then you come up from there. So that opens new doors towards the future. We need not enter into that discussion. But matter is imperfect. You may have all the realizations inside. You may be a very good man. You may be a saint. You may be anybody. But your body will be subject to disintegration, disease, death. You can stall it. You can delay it. You can overcome it momentarily, but eventually it takes over. So, I find this explanation the most complete, the most logical, and most consistent with our real-time observation. Matter is the problem. So, he is explaining how matter has come into existence, what are its difficulties and possibilities. Error ever pursues its knowledge. Darkness is inseparably the companion and background of its light. That's because of the instrument it has devised. Truth is successfully sought, and yet when grasped, it ceases to be truth and the quest has to continue. There are times, no, when you feel, ah, I understood. I read something from Life Divine, understood. When you go back, you say, it's all gone. So this is the problem. Love is there, but it cannot satisfy itself. Joy is there, but it cannot justify itself. And each of them drags as if its chain, or casts as if its shadow, its own opposites. Anger and hatred and indifference, satiety and grief and pain. And now Sri Aurobindo continues the third problem. And when we seek to know why this is so, we see that the success of this inertia and obstruction is due to a third power of matter. For the third fundamental opposition which matter offers to spirit is this, that it is the culmination of the principle of division and struggle. So we have inertia, ignorance, inertia and division, fragmentation to the utmost. But because oneness is always there behind, secretly, Therefore, there is always a need to join things. Nothing is separate in itself. There is the law of interdependence. This is what is the largest meaning of the word yajna. Everything is interconnected. Everything in this universe is interdependent. And when consciously we want to recreate this unity, so there are only two ways. Aggregate or assimilate. Assimilation is swallow, finish. You become one, but at the expense of other. Or aggregate, come together, but in a disharmonious harmony. This is the problem, because we don't know how to recreate that spiritual unity within us. So this is the problem of matter. The third, it is the force of division. So what it leads to? Both methods repose on death, aggregation and assimilation. One as a means, the other as a condition of life. And both presuppose, as the condition of world existence, a constant struggle of the divided units with each other. We have completely forgotten that deep inside we are one. So each material unit, let's take human being, struggles with the other human being as if, you know, simplest thing, you put two human beings together. Somebody wrote actually, "Sir, I have been praying to mother that between me and my wife there should be harmony. I didn't know what to write." I said, "You can pray, what else you can do?" Even God would find very difficult to do it. Because as long as life is with ego and desire, how can you expect there will be harmony? There may be a working harmony. You lead your life, I'll lead my way. That's most you can reach. Agree to disagree. Space. Khalil Gibran understood it when he said, "Let there be spaces in your togetherness." Now that space requirement is very big, which is fine. So then they say, "But there is no togetherness left." But it's a real challenge, because separate, distinct units matter. Matter makes you feel so separate. You may feel in the heart as one. That's why I see what happens. These are practical issues. Two people are fond of each other. Everything is fine. You know, when it's to the heart and mind, thought exchanges on the messaging app. Then they meet. What strikes? Not the beautiful words you exchange, but the smell. I can't bear the other person's smell. The other person cannot bear this person's habits. Why? Because that's something striking. I can't bear his sound. He speaks very harshly. But when he was messaging, he was not speaking. So it was very nice. This is the genuine problem. See, ultimately why? Because material units. You can't say, you know, both of you are one basically. He said, yeah, we are one, but we can't sleep together. That's it. End of the story. Because that oneness ends. When it comes to matter, it's not possible. This is a common problem. People are getting separated because of snoring. No, there is a flip side to it. The flip side, I'll tell you. But there are actually clips to pinch your nose so that you snore less. But there is a very interesting flip side to it. I actually know that somebody who wanted to seek divorce, he actually feigned snoring. And he would feign snoring so that his wife gets irritated and ultimately says, but the wife was more modern, she knew things and she just got a clip and put it on the nose and said, "That's all that is required." That takes us to the story of Chavan Rishi, of Chavan Pras fame. You know, when there was a girl who loved him so much and he had a kind of look deliberately which nobody will be fond of, but she really loved him and took care and everything. Then one day he says, "You know, I was testing you." So then he comes out and he already knows the secret of youth, kayakalp, but he doesn't reveal it. He says, "Okay, let me see. If your love is true, you'll love me regardless of this." That's one of the tests people say. But most of the time, material, matter, and it leads eventually to death. And this has practical implication. At the level of the human body, mother says desires irritate the organs. What happens? Maybe there is excessive desire for food, for anything. It could be for money, greed for money, could be for sexuality, whatever. Or anger, fear. These things begin to tax upon one organ because they have their end points. And when they began to tax upon one organ, it's at the expense of others. See, war has started within the body. So bitter inside, so liver has to process. So it processes at the expense of the energy needed for the kidney, needed for the heart. And that's why when one organ goes into failure, there is a tendency very soon or later to develop failure in other organs, one after another. Because they act as if they are separate. But deep within they are one. Normally there is no problem. Automatically liver doesn't go on strike, though no, kidney was given more energy, no. But we, the vital, the moment it creates an instability, then it comes to survival. Liver says, my survival is more important. The brain says, mine is more important. Of course, there are mechanisms. So they begin to quarrel within each other. So death. Each person quarreling with other person, death. To live in the company of an extremely querulous person is extremely dangerous. Stay at a distance, so much better. Yeah, it is dangerous because it sucks the energy. They are all, you take the common route is this, it leads to ultimately disintegration and force of death. Whereas harmony, life is harmony, life seeks harmony, life seeks unity. So it leads to death. And then finally, as a result of all this, especially and most fatally, the ignorance, inertia and division of matter impose on the vital and mental existence, emerging in it the law of pain and suffering and the unrest of dissatisfaction with the status, with its status of division, inertia and ignorance. So this is how we should now upgrade our status, not single or in relationship, but divided are united. That's it. Status division. So we have seen how life, the balance with life is disturbed. We also know that how the same thing happens with mind. So when the mind wakes up in the world it lives and which it has to know and master in order to be happy, secondly to the ultimate barrenness and limitation of this knowledge, to the meagerness and insecurity of the power and happiness it brings, and to the awareness of an infinite consciousness, knowledge, true being, in which alone is to be found a victorious and infinite happiness. Okay, so we can go back to the next paragraph on page 261. And when in man life becomes wholly self-conscious, this unavoidable struggle and effort and aspiration reach their acme, and the pain and discord of the world become finally too keenly sensible to be borne with contentment. That's why people say, oh, he's hard-skinned. Hard-skinned means he doesn't care. He says if there is fight, quarrel, he says it's a way of life. But there's, as we grow more and more developed in consciousness, there is an instinctive need for harmony. Some people need to quarrel. They even have theories. Unless you are angry, how can you digest a meal? I have never understood. But they have to fight. If they don't fight for 2 days, one of them says, are you okay? Do you have some fever? You have to fight. 2 days they haven't fought. So they cannot digest food. It's a sad situation. It will become a way of life. But as you grow, every time there is fight, every time there is a quarrel, doesn't it jar with the instinctive need of harmony? But there is no way you can change. A person bound into matter, head and law, neck deep, cannot understand all this. So he simply says, you are making too much fuss. You are being oversensitive. Actually, there is no need. But actually, this is the course of evolution. So, one tries but fails. So, last line, man is such a finite seeming infinity and cannot fail to arrive at a seeking after the infinite. So, what happens at the end? See God's plan, so wonderful. Ultimately, he drives us towards a point. Finite is seeking infinite. Why? Because deep within its supermind, infinite. So after some time, quarrel, struggle, all this, so you become Tulsidas or Kalidas. So those who become Tulsidas or Kalidas, you can imagine, this is the power that Tilottama told Tulsidas. Yeah, you love me like a fool, stupid fellow. If you loved God like this, you would have found him. He says, thank you. I was waiting for my guru. You are my guru. He goes away. And he becomes what he becomes. So this is how ultimately one. Now when you discover the infinite, then you can play with the finiteness. There is no problem. Because you can sense the infinite behind every finite. That's how Mother and Sri Aurobindo held together so many finites, fighting with each other. And yet when they came to Mother, she could hold them together. She could laugh, she would be amused, she would smile. She would simply pour her love because she is conscious that she is infinite and all these are infinities in the making. But before that, there is a struggle. So, we'll come to... So, all this leads to laws of attraction, repulsion, all of that. So, we can skip that. Page 263. All this means the denial of Ananda, the negation of the Trinity of Satchidananda, and therefore, if the negation be insuperable, the futility of existence. For existence is throwing itself out in the play of consciousness and force, must seek that movement not merely for itself, but for satisfaction of for the play, in the play. So it's not enough that I discover Ananda inside. Ekaki na ramyate. I want Ananda in other, otherwise it is so dull and boring. You go to watch a movie or somewhere, you are in a state of bliss and the other is saying, I am having this pain. You know, I am suffering from indigestion. You know, I have this. So what will you enjoy? The joy will be diminished by fractions. So because one seeks this infinite Ananda, the world has become, seems so strikingly opposite, the challenge. This is the whole basis of the pessimist theory of the world. Optimist, it may be as to worlds and states beyond, but pessimist as to the earthly life and the destiny of the mental being and his dealings with the material universe. So, optimist in this sense, you can't change things here, but after you die, go and show there your ticket to heaven. Their husband and wife don't fight. Because that's the law there. But here you can't afford that. This is the story so far. So they declare the world is a vanity and delusion, and the only way the infinite can only recover itself by rejecting as an error and a false step its attempt to find itself in the finite. This is what happens at a stage of development when one becomes conscious of the infinite, of the divine within. Then the contrast is so huge that the only thing is that, well, let's leave. Till you have discovered, till you are living in that, you try adjustment, accommodation, all these things. But the more one gets closer to the divine, the contrast becomes more and more. And the urge is to merge in the infinite. We come to the last two pages, page 264. That this is the consequence so far. And in that case, Shobhindra describes very, with a touch of irony, the sense of tragedy, and the 4-5 lines below. If mind is the ultimate origin, it is the last word, then mind is a dividing element, so it overpowers them only to be overpowered by them, repeating eternally a fruitless cycle, must be the last and highest word of cosmic existence. So mind keeps on, there is a fight which goes on because it's itself a principle of division. It is the origin of division. So if mind is the creator, then ultimately you have to discard this world. So there are theories like that which say, as far as creation is concerned, mind or Maya. But there is the divine who is beyond the mind. So this world cannot, because mind has created it. Mind is a force of division. So naturally, don't even have to think about matter. There is division operating in the world. And division can never keep us happy forever. Because there will be struggle, there will be fight, there will be supremacy or subordination, the struggle of existence, all this will be there. But then he says, but no such consequence ensues if, on the contrary, it is the immortal and infinite spirit that has veiled itself in the dense robe of material substance and works there by the supreme creative power of supermind, permitting the divisions of mind and the reign of the lowest or maternal or material principle only as initial conditions for a certain evolutionary play of the one in the many. So this is the basic logic that Sri Aurobindo brings. Mind is a subordinate power of the supermind. And it has its purpose. Its purpose is to create individualities, to create those units. But behind is the supermind, the real idea. It will step into the play at one point of time and it will pick up all these individualities and create a harmonious togetherness. This is the logic, that if the creator is supermind, then we cannot write off this world as hopeless. But if mind is the creator, then this world is hopeless. So this is the logic. On the contrary, few lines below, it is the natural and inevitable conclusion of the nature of cosmic existence that supermind will come and there will be a spiritual being and a supramental being emerging out of the mental being. Such a supramental being would, as we have seen, liberate the mind from the knot of its divided existence and use the individualization of mind as merely a useful subordinate action of the all-embracing supermind. So now the power of division is there, but subordinated to the power of unity. Now one knows the truth of things, but to each thing it works according to its own law. That's a very beautiful line in the Gita. Na buddhi bhedam. They who know the oneness don't delude others. So what it means is that you discover oneness. Now, if somebody in, say, 12th standard or 20-year-old says, you know, tell me what is the ultimate truth of life, you say it's God, so I should leave everything and go in search of God. No. Finish your studies. Take up a job. Now, why? Because he knows the law of development of each one. And that's why in Savitri, the immortal sees not as we vainly sees. So you have to see the line of development. He won't say, oh, discard desire, it's all meaningless. Straight away come. No, you go through it. There is a process. So that's how the supermind then uses mind as a subordinate. It knows. It doesn't blur the divisions. It knows that each thing must fulfill along its lines of evolution. It doesn't create a confusion of dharmas. So this is the beauty when supermind uses mind as an instrument and when mind acts independent, as if independent of the supermind. This is the difference. So it's the same difference when a Babu is rejecting, refusing your application, then you say, Ikbar, sahab se mila do. So you go to the sahab. Sahab looks at the application, says, sanction. Now the Babu says, but this is not according to the rule. So what will sahab say? You have not understood the rule. That's why they say spirit of the rule. So now when the mind becomes an instrument, he is like that Babu who has accepted that, well, I know the rule, but I don't understand the spirit of the rule. Still he has to go back and forth every time. He cannot independently decide. But when there comes a time when he takes the charge, because now supermind has modified, transformed the mind, then it understands the spirit of the rule. That's what we see in many of our scriptures. Vali, when he is being killed, he tells Rama, you are an embodiment of dharma, but why did you kill me? Main vairi Sugriv Piyara. We are both brothers. Why did you come into this struggle of brothers? Why you had to kill me? And then Rama hides a lot of things. He says, well, all your life you have lived by adharma. Now you are talking of dharma just because you are at the receiving end of. But if you look at it very deeply, that was a time when the monkey world could have evolved along two lines. One is the line of Vali, where might is right. The other is the line of Sugriv, where you are humble and subordinate yourself to a higher consciousness, which Rama embodies. Rama was very clear. This must go and this must remain. So same thing he does with Asuras. He gives chances. Ravan refuses. He goes. Vibhishan accepts and he is changed. So always the actions of the divine in the world are not understood because we want a standard format. Why Arjun is favored? People, till now you have those social justice seekers. Gross injustice was done to Karna. Why did Sri Krishna have to meddle? He didn't lift an arrow. But he made sure that Karna died, Dronacharya died. This is the logic. Again, evolutionary crossroads. If Duryodhan and his type, supported by Bhishma and Karna, warrior though he may be and Suriputra, but staunchly stands by adharma, then Bharat would have declined way, way much earlier. Therefore, it must evolve along the lines of Arjun and the Pandavas. The same story is being repeated now. And all those, you know, sometimes we like to flatten everything. Death flattens. All is same, all is same. Well, hold on. In real life, you don't see it. There is a difference. And that's because of the evolutionary nature of life. All is not created one day. That's a very doctrine that 6 days God made the world and seventh day he went to rest. God knows why he rested after seeing what he has made. But that apart, because of the evolutionary progression, now the mind becomes an instrument of the supermind. And that explains the cryptic line in Savitri. When Savitri tells Death, Death, stay, live a while, be still my instrument. So it is still an instrument because it's needed for transitions, for passages. Because ultimately death is the product of division. Death is the last extreme result of division. So this will change when there is the unity in multiplicity, in diversity, when it's established, which is the law of the supermind. Until then, groups will strive, fight, wrestle. Each has to evolve along its own lines till it reaches that point where it has to transmute itself. So that's the process going on. Is there any reason why he should not also liberate the bodily existence from the present law of death? So supermind will liberate the mind. So mind will become a mind of light. It will understand what it should do and how it should do. Practical omniscience. It will liberate life also. And it will liberate also body. From the present law of death, division and mutual devouring, and use individualization of body as merely a useful subordinate term of the one divine conscious existence made serviceable for the joy of the infinite in the finite. What lovely lines. All different bodies of one body. And why they have been created? For the joy of the multiplicity. See, it changes everything. But my body versus your body, there is fight, struggle. So when we look at it like that every body is ultimately part of one body. But don't mix and match them and blur them. Each is required for its own. That's how different flowers form a bouquet. So we are each a little flower, at least meant to be a flower, to become a bouquet which will be offered to the Lord. Okay. And the next page. Okay. We skipped a line. Consciously immortal even in the changing of this robe of matter, possessed of his self-delight in a world subjected to the law of unity and love and beauty. Even he says there is a possibility that one may discard the body. But it's not with that pain and suffering. What discards takes another body very consciously. It's a conscious act. But doesn't, you know, that all that is in the future, which Aurobindo has already foreseen. And if man be the inhabitant of terrestrial existence, through whom, now here comes a very interesting line. And if man be the inhabitant of terrestrial existence, through whom that transformation of the mental into the supramental can at last be operated, is it not possible that he may develop as well as a divine mind and a divine life, also a divine body? Or, if the phrase seemed to be too startling to our present limited conceptions of human potential, may he not be, in his development of his true being and its light and joy and power, arrive at a divine use of mind and life and body, by which the divine descent of spirit into form shall be at once humanly and divinely justified. So these opening doors to several possibilities. One is divine body and divine life. Second is divine use. It's no more used for egoistic purposes. So divine use, how Sri Hanuman uses his mind, his body, his life, his emotions, everything at the service of the divine. So this is one way to understand. It's a divine use for which they are put. The one thing that can stand in the way of that ultimate terrestrial possibility is if our present view of matter and its laws represent the only possible relation between sense and substance. This he will discuss in the next chapter. Between the divine as knower and the divine as object, or if other relations being possible, they are yet not in any way possible here, but must be sought on higher planes of existence. In that case, it is in heavens beyond that we must seek our entire divine fulfillment. That's how people say. Religions base themselves on that. Few lines below he says, there is, however, no reason why we should accept this limiting conclusion. There are quite certainly other states, even of matter itself. There is undoubtedly an ascending series of the divine gradations of substance. There is the possibility of the material being transfiguring itself through the acceptation of a higher law than its own, which is yet its own because it is always there, latent and potential in its own secrecies. Meaning thereby that there are other worlds where there are other relations. Well, we understand how gods perceive this world. We know, we have watched ZTV and all that. They suddenly see and they know what is going on inside. They do some magic. So gods perceive the world very differently. their forms are also plastic. But we cannot perceive that way. But still, if they can influence this physical matter and the physical forms. For instance, rain can be brought down by the intervention of, let's say, beings of the higher world. If things can change, one example is when the seals were being killed and there was a signature campaign that, you know, seal killing should stop, and mother was one of them who had signed for it when it was brought to the mother. But mother laughs and says, I have signed, but I have sent message to the seals to migrate elsewhere than the South African coast. And in a couple of years, the seals had changed their migration. So if the higher consciousness can affect the material consciousness, if it can influence the physical matter, then where are we going to limit its possibilities? If it is true that one can pray to God and be healed, then why not this body itself can yield one day its divine possibilities? This is what Sri Aurobindo is revealing, which is so practical, so common sense. We all have experience. So there are these two possibilities. One is that here there is no choice. If you have a problem, go and take a physical method, physical means, settle it in the court or out of the court. But if there is a possibility of the divine intervention and changing things here, then to what extent can that intervention not go? So in typical religion, not here, elsewhere. You have to go through your karma, suffer whatever life gives you. You have no choice about it, accept it. And here comes Sri Aurobindo with a entirely new, fresh and optimistic, the greatest optimistic, if you may use the word, not theory, theory based on his experience, possible that no, because divine is hidden in matter, one day matter will yield its divinity which is concealed within it. Almighty powers are shut in nature's cells. But there is a process to it. It's not an impossible miracle. Suddenly one day somebody wakes up and says, oh, God is inside, everything must happen. No, there is a process of evolution. That's why at one place he says, mind is a mediator divinity with which we can close. When mother was asked, what is the use of thought? So she says the use of thought is to come in contact with the grace and direct it where it has to go. So for example, if you are ill, now if there is no power of thought which is developed, if one believes, I am full of fear, oh, I am helplessly bound, what can I do, what can the doctors do, what can God do, or you start getting into all that, it's a karma, what can I do? Now this is one way of approaching it. The second is the thought goes and prays, brings down grace at a particular spot, focuses, tries to heal. It may not happen. Yet, one has done a great service. What is that service? One has tried to bring matter into contact with the higher consciousness. And one day, as a result of these repeated descents and contact, one day matter will yield. Especially because now the supramental consciousness is acting. And even though one person may not be cured, he has opened the door for many others. This is how all science has progressed. And that's what I am trying with my cough. Please allow me. Thank you so much. Okay.